This is the July 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us, listen to us on demand online at willag.org. Look for us in your favorite podcast apps as well. We're in the iTunes Store. You can find us in Google Play. You can look us up on NPR One, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Our panelists for this week's edition of the program include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. She's in Morton, Illinois. Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. And Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Matt, I think I'd like to start with you, you and your colleagues, and put together a research project of sorts along with JSA. Why don't you tell me about both of those things and what you found with this aerial photography project across the Midwest?
Well, basically, there's four partners in AgMarket.net, and we all were sitting around trying to figure out how many producers that had called us and said they've got train wrecks, and so we, you hear about enough train wrecks, and I know what it looks like in my part of the world. I know what my yield capabilities are, but I just want to see, we want to see how bad things were in different areas, but we wanted to do it over a broad expanse. So we did 3 to 4 aerial trips per state. We partnered with Air Scout there in Champaign. They did 3 or 4 strips, basically north to south through most of the state in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Ohio, and Missouri, trying to get a look at, what's the crop look like? How much, essentially, how much bare dirt are we going to see? What kind of what kind of stand counts are we looking at? And so we did high resolution imaging to where we could actually count stalks from the air. It was pretty good stuff. And so we just, we partnered with a couple of people from the University of Illinois, like Dr. Scott Irwin and Dr. Nafziger, and then Dr. Nielsen from Purdue. And basically, we wanted to have them help us make sure we were using adequate resources, using the proper methodology, if you will, not only to characterize what we were looking at, but then to put some sort of a yield with it. And so I think that it told us a lot. We realized that there are probably even more issues out there than what we'd originally thought. It's really hard to get a handle on this crop right now, and I think looking at it from the air is one way that we can kind of get out ahead of that.
So when were the flights done?
Yeah, so we started flying actually in the eastern Corn Belt right before July 4th, and we realized we're going to have to wait a few days because, oh my gosh, we saw so much bare dirt. So we started in the western Corn Belt and basically western edge of Iowa and started working our way east. And so these pictures were taken from about the 1st or 2nd of July for about a 10 to 12 day period thereafter. So they've been pretty darn recent. And, you go to the website and you can look at the project and you can click on each individual area and look at the picture. So there's, 157,000 acres is what we observed. We feel like it was a fairly good cross section of that part of the Corn Belt.
So for those who are wondering, they can go to agmarket.net. Is this on the front page there? Is that right? I think maybe that it is at this point. But
it's Corn Project 2019. So, you go there and then you can click on to view the interactive photos. It's pretty interesting. I mean, we came up with a yield of 156. We were trying to come up with like a conservative approach. And we felt like given really good weather, especially consulting with, the academics that we were working with, we all agreed that 156 looked like something that might not be achievable unless we have really good weather to finish out the growing season. That was making the assumptions that we would be looking at a really good crop in state like Nebraska, for instance, that we didn't fly over. And so, bottom line, we think that harvested acres are going to come down a fair amount from what USDA says. And, it's going to be a moving target, but we all ought to be able to admit that getting to a harvested acre of the normal 92% is probably going to be really, really hard this year, given the kind of spring that we saw.
So you had Scott Irwin, ag economist, Emerson Nafziger, agronomist, both from the University of Illinois, and Bob Nielsen from Purdue, who's their agronomist there, all looking at this. What those two agronomists say about what they saw? What did they give you as insights as it relates to all the photos?
I think that they were surprised as well with the denitrification that we observed with the bare areas, with just extremely reduced stands, especially, of course, whenever you got into parts of Indiana and Ohio, much less so with Illinois. But bottom line, we were seeing some pretty serious agronomic issues.
So, of course, that's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net talking about the U.S. Corn Project. Again, you can find that on their website at AgMarket.net. And when you go there, you'll just see a map once you get to this point. And just like any other map that you'd find online, you can click on it. There's little dots there, and every time you hit a dot, you'll see some acreage from the air, and you can zoom way in and take a look at it. Interesting stuff. So now let's try to put this in place with what kind of conditions we have on the ground now. Ellen Dearden, I've been across Iowa, parts of Illinois at this point. I've not been to the east. Crop looks pretty good, but I'm not sure how really good it is. I drove through your area. A lot of corn is tasseling now.
Right in our area, there's not much that's tasseling. As you get closer to the west side of Peoria, you see quite a bit that's tasseling between Peoria and Galesburg. There's a couple really good areas in there. I would say just from the ground, my observation is that we sure need a rain. We've missed rains a couple times this week that have been around, and the beans are growing some, but a good inch of rain would certainly perk things up. Our beans are not yet blooming.
How about in your area, Bill Gentry?
The statement that I told the guys at the office last week was I drive pretty much the same route down to Lafayette every day, but one side of the road, the corn was knee-high. The other road, the corn was pollinating and highly variable. The beans are kicking in just a little bit, but they're still, you know, maybe 10 inches tall. And there's some that are a lot shorter than that. So I think it's highly variable. The one thing I would say, too, that out into the fields, there's a lot of flooded spots that you don't really see right now. But Sherm brought up some pictures from his drone and some of the other things that I've seen from around here. And there's some really bare pockets and fields that are going to be very significant come fall.
And I should check in on local conditions with you as well, Matt Bennett.
You know, some of the early corn looks pretty good. I'm like Bill. I mean, boy, there's a lot of variability. And so we see some that's pollinating. We see some that's, you know, in a completely different situation than that, maybe barely waist high. We're even seeing some that's pollinating awfully short. And I know that that's not a great situation. So, you know, most agronomists that I talk to are throwing out some pretty low numbers for the state of Illinois, especially in comparison to last year's gigantic yield that we posted.
So we've had four down days, Ellen, in Chicago through Thursday. How bad has this been, and will there be much of a recovery?
Well, you know, in the last month's run, I think we can say that we're still pretty much in a sideways mode in East Corn. Shows a lot of support in the 420 range, a lot of resistance at 450. We're still within that range. My guess is that we're going to bounce back up into that 450 area again unless we close, particularly on a weekly basis, under 420. I thought maybe we were going to stop at the 50-day moving average on Thursday, which was about 431 and a fraction, and we took that out. And so that may be a signal that we've got some time to spend before we can go back higher.
So time does have value. I think that's what you're trying to tell me. And that you do expect this marketplace to eventually recognize the condition of the crop across the whole of the Corn Belt. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say so. We really may have to get well into fall before we recognize the size of the crop. You know, we're going to get some planted acres updates in the August crop report, but I think that we have no clue what the harvested acres will be, nor do we have a clue what the yield will be, and it may take us well into fall before we have a real good feeling on those two.
And I think I'll pull all of you, but let's start with you, Ellen. What's your working number for planted acres at this time?
Oh, Todd, I don't even know that we can put a working number. I've been working on a number that's under 90. I don't think we're down to 85, but think we're somewhere in the 86 to 88 and a half range.
Anybody else want to jump in, Bill Gentry?
You know, I have no arguments with those numbers. I think it's a moving target. I think we're going to get some more numbers here at the in another month. The USDA, I don't think, is actively engaged the situation as far as acres are concerned. But, you know, they have to deal with the surveys that they get and the information that they can collect. And they're not going to anticipate very much. They have been a little bit more proactive this year in reducing the yield in the acres a little bit. But I think they're just going to have to get some more information or data in order to make significant adjustments to the numbers.
And I recognize while I'm asking about acreage, I suspect most of you think it's yield rather than acres that we need to really deal with. But why don't we get a number from you as well, Matt?
You know, I think as far as acreage is concerned, I'm probably a little bit above Ellen, but I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up being right, which I know she's just kind of throwing out a working number, you know, so I'm not putting her on the spot. But, you know, I think that it'd be really tough to get above 90. I've been interested to see some of these guys saying, well, the original intentions was 98 or 100 just because we came out with RMA saying 7 to 8, supposedly. And so as far as prevent plant goes, but I think we're below 80 on harvested safely. And I think that that's what I want to look at other than yield, like you just referenced.
Hey, so I do have a question about this. When Bill Northey has talked about more than 10 million acres of prevent plant, that's of all crops. I don't think I've seen of anything that divides that out among the crops. Has anybody seen a corn number or a soybean number from USDA anywhere? I don't think that they have yet.
Basically, it was from sources, you know, quote unquote, yesterday within RMA that said that we were looking at 7 to 8 on corn and 2 to 3 on soybeans. And then the total of around 12.5 is what that tidbit of information said. And it was also, quote unquote, you know, it looks like it will inevitably grow like it usually does.
Let's talk about what all this means. So did farmers take advantage, really actually take advantage, Bill, of the price run up into that 440 cash range in the last week and a half for new crop?
I don't think so. I think they're pretty sure. I think realistically strategizing it, we have been saying if you really think you've got it, you can make some sales, but they're for higher prices later on. And I think our in-house guidance has typically been buy more puts. So I think realistically knowing your risk and protecting the downside, but leaving the upside really open because it's undefined at this particular point in time. So we're cautiously optimistic that the market will engage. We think part of it could come in August. It may be even later than that. It's going to be a disappointment for the producers because they're just sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting for the prices to kick in. But the fact of the matter is we just can't really figure out what this yield is going to be for an extended period of time yet. So we just have to be patient and wait for the market.
And how about for old crop in that case, Bill?
Old crop, push it out the door, good basis. I think a lot of guys around here are getting 50 to 60 cents over. I think that's a perfect opportunity to move it all out. And re-own it on paper. I think realistically, most of the action is in the new crop as far as the risk is concerned. But if you've got 50, 60 cents over in basis, that's a really good rewarding situation for most areas.
Ellen, your read on this marketplace?
If we want to talk about old crop, my observation is very much like Bill, that you should be pushing this old crop out the door. We have seen some positive basis at processors. The river system is still a little bit backed up. I know at Havana they've been waiting for barges for the last couple days, and the elevators did not open until 10 o'clock in the morning. That makes for a short day of incoming, but I think that guys need to be cognizant that these over basis aren't going to last too long. If we're moving North Dakota, South Dakota corn into the eastern part of the Corn Belt.
Ellen, I want to follow up with you on some of the fundamentals in the marketplace, both corn and soybeans, and maybe wheat as well. When you go back and look at that World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate report, what did you tease out of it that made a difference to you in the last week, and what do we need to watch?
Those reports don't ever mean a whole lot to me from the standpoint I think we need to look at the broad sweeps. And what those reports really showed us is that South America has a big corn crop. South America probably can meet an awful lot of export demand, and they're much cheaper than we are right now. I think that's kind of the takeaway on corn. On beans, it looks like everybody is flush with beans. And with China out of the market, and ADM put out a paper the middle of this week that said China doesn't need to buy any beans at all from the U.S., can be well satisfied from other countries. So the wheat market might have been the more interesting one. When you looked at world wheat supplies and taking out China, because we never really know what they have, we're seeing a tightening situation on global wheat. We're not seeing a lot of response in the markets here on wheat. Wheat really was the leader to the downside on Thursday, and primarily because we've got a lot of hedge pressure on this wheat market and no places to go. There's still an awful lot of old crop, 2018 crop wheat in the country that needs to move out of Kansas and Nebraska, and a pretty decent new crop wheat supply coming in. Lack of export demand really has kind of dulled any kind of supply worries in here.
So they used to say for quite some time that they were holding wheat just for the storage and to be paid for it at the commercial level. Has that gone away and changed? I guess I've not asked that question for some time now.
No, it really hasn't. And that's primarily why wheat goes into storage and stays there.
Yeah. So if that's the case, that means the hedge pressure, once we get through harvest, should come off and we should see a pop in the wheat market then?
I would think so. And really, there's a pretty strong seasonal for wheat to move higher from August into November. And my guess is that we'll see something similar to that. That could help the corn price a little bit. But we saw an awful lot of spread activity in the grains over the last couple of months' time. And that's really been kind of the situation. They were leaning on beans hard and buying wheat against it or buying corn against it. And those look to be getting unwound here.
So, Matt, I have a question, and I'm going to switch crops again, but come back to corn and think about basis levels from the east to the west and what a difference there is, how old crop corn has been moving across the United States, not necessarily into the export market, and what advantages or disadvantages producers might find in their local areas.
Well, to me, I understand what these other two guys are saying about rewarding. The basis is telling you to go ahead and sell some corn. At the same time, I guess, talking about basis, I've got to ask myself, especially in some of these areas that typically start harvesting around the 1st of September, what might basis look like, about the 15th of September? Because I don't think there's going to be hardly any corn harvested in my part of the world. So I do think there's going to be opportunities regionally. Does a person want to hold on to too much corn? I've been in the grain business, and I'm not a big fan of holding on to corn when it's 90 degrees outside. Sometimes you get into all kinds of interesting issues, whether it be bugs later in the summer or you name it. But, we have to keep a close eye on our bins, first of all. But second of all, I do think there are going to be some opportunities out there, particularly the further east you go. So, obviously there's a lot of issues, whenever you get into eastern Indiana, into Ohio, some of the elevators over there, according to JSA, who we work very closely with, are having a heck of a time being able to source corn. And so I would assume, especially with this market turning lower, the basis is going to have to do a little bit more work to try to get those bushels purchased. So you get any sort of a bump back up in the market, like Ellen was referencing earlier, if we push back up towards 450 by Golly, I think I would be rewarding that market because I do think as you get closer to harvest, once they get a sniff of some new corn, that basis is going to erode very quickly.
Bill, what concerns do you have about the soybean market at this time, whether it's on the supply or demand side?
I think the supply side is my major concern. I think the demand is already basically broken. But the supply side, I think a lot of people think that this bean crop can basically recover a fair amount. And beans are very resilient. But the bottom line is we've got these shorter bean plants, and they're not going to have as many nodes on them. And so by default, we've already trimmed our upside yield potential. And a year after year, we talk about August is the yield maker or breaker. It actually might be late August this year. And I think that we just don't have the yield punch in beans that we would be cautious for earlier on.
And in Ohio, Indiana, which are both heavy bean states, how much of a problem do they have compared, do you think, to the rest of the Midwest?
I don't have a real good feel for anything other than Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio. But the bottom line is I think we are challenged. I mean, when I go out there and this is July 20th and beans are a foot tall, it's just not going to go well.
Ellen, have you been thinking about the bean crop and the supply side very much?
Oh, yeah, I have been, because this area, I would say, typically is 60-65% corn and the rest beans. And I would say this year we are exactly the flip of that. So we see a lot of bean acres. We see a lot of beans planted. Beans, you know, we've had these gigundous yields the last couple of years based on early plantings and lots of time with optimum amount of sunshine. We're not seeing that at all this year. As I said, beans in this area are not blooming yet. It is the middle of July, not the middle of June. So we've already lost a month's worth of peak sunshine. I think the bean production is definitely hurt, and it may be kind of a wild card that people don't think that that's been the case.
Hey, Matt, did you or were you able to do anything with soybeans on the Air Scout tour at all, or were they not up far enough yet?
No, I mean, you could see a few bean fields here and there, but, you know, that wasn't necessarily the focus of our study. If we wanted to get down and look, you know, you could certainly zoom in on the pictures that weren't the high res ones and just kind of see a general view. And there certainly was no question that we're looking at very short beans, first of all, and second of all, off collar beans. And so I agree with both of these guys. I think that Ellen makes a good point. I mean, the thing that people got to remember is that these beans are going to shut down whenever the daylight tells them to shut down. And so they're only going to get so much blooming at this stage. And like Ellen was saying, you've already lost a month and you can't get it back. And, you know, like with corn, if you have a really good fall and you have a good finish, there could be a little bit better yield scenario unfold. But with soybeans, you're kind of stuck at this point. And so I'm a little bit concerned as far as what your bean yield is going to look like. With that being said, you know, there's certainly some buffer, whether you're talking U.S. carry or world carry, especially whenever you talk about some of the demand concerns, whenever you're looking at the lack of demand from China due to ASF.
Do you think that the soybean market will respond eventually, and will that cause Brazilian and Argentina farmers, particular Brazilian farmers, to plant more bean acres?
Oh, we've got to hope so. You know, I mean, people have been asking me, what do you really want to see this corn market be able to break out of this rut? You know, before these last couple of days, obviously, it looked like we were just completely sideways. And I said, well, let's get a rally in the corn in the soybean market, because you get a rally in the soybean market, you know, then you start to go away from some of these talks of 95 to 100 million acres of corn next year for the U.S. farmer, as well as the South American farmer going heavy on corn as well. So, you know, I do think that this soybean market will see some stability when we start talking yields. And I don't think that the acreage is going to grow substantially. I do think there's a lot of late soybeans planted. But once again, to talk about our points, what can you realistically expect out of these soybeans?
I want to talk about the technical side just a little bit as well. You mentioned a couple of things, Ellen. I've heard over the past week several times about a potential head and shoulder top in both the corn and the soybean market. Does that concern you very much at this time?
Well, I have to say it's potential on both of them, and we haven't broken the neckline in either one, and you got to do that to complete a head and shoulders top. On the bean side of things, it looks like a pretty flaky right-hand shoulder, but again, we would need to go down under 880 to be breaking that neckline. Yes, I'm cognizant of it, but am I particularly worried? Not right now, I'm not.
And in your office, Bill, I know you've got Sherman, the southern part of Illinois. What's he telling you about that crop?
He was really wet, and they're probably rougher than we are, and we feel like we're kind of rough. But he basically brought up some pictures from his drone. He went out and checked out some fields, and there's just big bald spots all over the place, and you can't see it from the road anymore. He's thinking that maybe it's a little bit pent up as far as the market response is concerned. And I think realistically, I'm real nervous. And going back to the head and shoulders chart pattern, I've been cognizant of it too. I'm a little bit nervous. I'd like to think that the fundamentals will keep it from coming to fruition. But the other thing too is, how soon are we going to get bullish fodder for this market to chew? I mean, the bull needs to be fed, and we haven't got fed for a couple of weeks. So the bottom line there is, does this chart pattern come to only to recover a little bit later down the road when we get some more significant news that's closer to the fundamentals that we're observing and talking about today?
Yeah, what would be on the horizon other than dry weather, I suppose, is about the only thing on the horizon that would be bullish at this point, right? Unless there's a deal cut with China.
Yeah, I think that a better yield expectation, an accurate one, go through the IC fields every day, that they're going to be pollinating in the same field three different times. That's not going to be good. So we need to get a better handle on yield expectations and also just basically realize that this is going to be a highly variable situation. And when I say that, I also know that commercially, the consumption of this crop may be highly variable, because I think the guys that process corn, if it's not the right condition or it doesn't finish properly, extracting what they need from this might be exceedingly difficult.
Ellen, what didn't I cover that was on your list for today?
Volatility in the market. You know, we're going to continue to see volatility in the grains, but keep in mind what the crude oil market did this week. I mean, we started out the week above $60 a barrel, and on Thursday afternoon, we're under $56. So we're close to $55. So it's not just the grain markets that are been volatile. And look at the hog market. We had a limit up move on Wednesday, or nearly limit up, and just couldn't see much follow through today. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of markets just very nervous, looking for some kind of new information.
Let's get a final word from each of you. Matt Bennett of agmarket.net. I'll start with you for the afternoon.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely going to be volatile moving forward. We've had better prices, you know, here for a while than what we've seen for the last few years. But, you know, as we were talking about earlier, a lot of folks are in a kind of a holding pattern. So, you know, I definitely wouldn't get overly aggressive until we get a really good handle on yields, especially whenever it comes to cash. You know, you could put a floor under things if you're getting worried, but, you know, I want to have a really good idea of what I'm going to produce before I get too carried away this year.
Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
I think this is the one where you just really hone in on your patience skills. This market's going to test us. It's got plenty of potential, hopefully not a whole lot of risk right now. But the bottom line is, we have to wait for the market to wake up. We can't wake it up.
Alan Dearden from AgriView.
The more I look at this South American corn crop, I realize that Brazil really can grow a lot of corn. It looks like between Argentina and Brazil, total corn crops will be north of 155 million metric tons. That really puts them in a position flush with corn. Where is it going to go?
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. Our thanks this week go to our panelists, including Ellen Dearden from AgriView, out of Morton, Illinois, Matt Bennett of agmarket.net, out of Windsor, Illinois, and Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You may listen to our daily agricultural programming on WILL AM 580 each and every business day of the year, starting at 8:55 a.m. with the opening market report at 10:58. We do the mid-morning market report, the midday report at 2 minutes to the hour, 1 o'clock, and of course the closing market report comes up at 2:06 each and every afternoon. Most of those programs are up online not long after they air on the radio station. This program, Commodity Week, is up before it ever airs on a radio station. Find it all at willag.org.